This is a special streaming on demand presentation from 92.9 WBPM, your classic hit station.
We were evolving our own sounds, but also, of course, we were learning to play the bloody instruments. It was an inevitable development. Yeah, I think it shows through that period.
Pink Floyd was not a band that sprung out into the world fully formed. From their start as a college band in the mid-1960s, Pink Floyd evolved over the years to become what it is. For the next hour, we'll hear how the band came together and more from drummer and founding member Nick Mason. I'm Craig Bailey. Welcome to Creation, the early years of Pink Floyd. Nick Mason met Roger Waters and Richard Wright at Architecture College.
I do remember our first meetings because we didn't immediately bond and go. It wasn't like the Monkees, and we all became great friends immediately. And as far as I remember, Roger tried to borrow my car and I wouldn't lend it to him. And Roger tried to get a cigarette from Rick and Rick wouldn't give him a cigarette. So the omens were not good initially. Eventually, someone asked us if we would play a couple of songs that he'd written, and he wanted to play them to a publisher. And so we learnt these songs and obviously sort of became a band because of learning these songs. And the publisher said the songs were quite good, but the band was truly dreadful, which of course fired us to greater things. Apart from anything else, college was free and you were given a grant. So I remember the day the grant came through for Roger, and we went down Tottenham Court Road and bought a bass guitar with it. And the change we used to buy a curry, I think.
Sid Barrett joined the band in 1965. Nick Mason.
What happened was that they knew Sid from Cambridge. Oh, not they, Roger in particular knew him. And he was rated as one of the sort of bright, bright young musicians in Cambridge. And he was coming to London to go to art school. So there was a big arrangement, really, that Sid would join the band. And of course, this is what transformed us from just being a sort of, do the odd cover song or whatever, into actually having a repertoire of original songs.
At first, they called themselves the T-Set, then found out that name was taken. They switched to the Pink Floyd sound, taken from two blues musicians, Pink Anderson and Floyd Council. Eventually, they removed sound from the name.
These are the Pink Floyd, and this is called Flaming. Very strange, ethereal sounds.
Alone in the clouds all blue, flying on an eiderdown. Hippie, you can't see me, but I can you. Blazing in the foggy dew. Sitting on a unicorn, two
Flaming, played by Pink Floyd on John Peel's BBC show. Pink Floyd's audience grew in London in the mid-1960s, where the drug of choice was LSD. They played psychedelic music along with elaborate light shows at underground clubs like the UFO. EMI Records signed the group in early 1967.
Almost immediately what happened was that we did some shows in London. Our career began to take off. We got a record deal, and we were immediately put in the back of a transit van and sent all round the north of England. So while all these hippies were dressing in flowered trousers and wandering around the streets of London smoking dope, we were somewhere on the M5 on our way to Birmingham to play at some top-ranked ballroom where the audience were hoping a soul band was turning up, and were bitterly disappointed when we appeared.
Pink Floyd's debut album was The Piper at the Gates of Dawn. Drummer Nick Mason.
The Piper at the Gates of Dawn consists of virtually entirely Sid songs, apart from Interstellar Overdrive, which is sort of the four of us basically improvising, and Doctor Doctor, which is not one of Roger's strongest songs, but and not really an indicator of how great his songs would become. I mean, the funny thing with Sid's songwriting is that actually it encompasses quite a broad range of sort of genres almost, you know. So you've got these rather whimsical things, sort of pastoral, the gnome, bike, scarecrow, which are, you know, very English accent songs about rural life and sort of musings almost. And then you've got Astronomy Domine, which is a full-on sort of rock space moment, but it's still quite structured, unlike Interstellar Overdrive, for instance, which was basically an opportunity for improvising. So it's very hard to, you know, if you're trying to look for who Sid is through his songwriting, it's complicated because it covers so many different areas almost.
Before the album came out, the band released a couple of singles. The first was Arnold Lane.
In some ways, it's a funny song. It's a sort of true story. Arnold Lane was this guy in Cambridge who'd keep stealing underwear, ladies' underwear from the washing lines. And I didn't feel it was particularly shocking or was going to affect the morals of the young generation. But still surprised that the BBC saw fit to ban that, which was then one of the pirate stations followed suit. Whereas 6 months later, they were very happy to play Walk on the Wild Side by Lou Reed. Which, but that's English morals for you.
Arnold Lane had a strange hobby, collecting clothes, moonshine, washing lime. They suit him fine. On the wall hung a tall mirror, distorted view, see-through baby blue. He dug it on one lane. It's not the same. Takes two to know, two to know. A nasty sort of person. They gave him time, doors, bang, chain gang.
Arnold Lane, played by Pink Floyd. The second single that Pink Floyd released in 1967 was See Emily Play, drummer and founding member Nick Mason.
I think it is about a girl that Sid knew. It was just, it's really, I suppose you'd say, a love song of sorts. But it was important for us because it was not banned by the BBC. And did become a hit. And it was it uses some recording techniques that we'd not come across before. And I think it was Joe Boyd who'd done this this double-speed piano in the middle of it, which we'd never really encountered that sort of business of being able to manipulate the sound to that extent. So that was a really useful sort of moment where you realise that there's so many possibilities in a recording studio. I think that was one of the great things that EMI did for us when they put us into Abbey Road, was they let us learn there. You have to remember that at this point in time, I mean, I know a number of my contemporaries who were in successful bands but were never even allowed in the control room. The engineer and the producer would more or less get them to play the song and then send them off to the pub, and then they would work on how to assemble it. Whereas Abbey Road and EMI absolutely understood that we wanted to learn about how the studio worked.
Emily tries but misunderstands. She's often inclined to borrow somebody's dreams till tomorrow. There is no other day. Let's try it another way. You'll lose your mind and play three gates from A. See Emily play. After dark, Emily cries. Gazing through trees in sorrow, hardly a sound till tomorrow. There is no other day. Let's try it another way. You'll lose your mind and play. Gown that touches the ground. Float on a river forever and ever, Emily. There is no other day. Let's try it another way. You'll lose your mind and play.
See Emily Play by Pink Floyd. Coming up, more stories from Nick Mason and a lot of music. I'm Craig Bailey, and you're listening to Creation, the early years of Pink Floyd.
The Hudson Valley's biggest hits, WPPM.
Welcome back to Creation, the early years of Pink Floyd. I'm Craig Bailey. P. Pink Floyd's main songwriter and frontman, Syd Barrett, began to behave erratically. Sometimes he'd miss a show or just stare off into space. Syd's childhood friend, David Gilmour, was brought into the band to help as guitarist and singer. They began working on their second album, A Saucerful of Secrets. It included Syd's last song for the band, drummer Nick Mason.
Well, with Jug Band Blues, Syd said that what he wanted was a proper silver band. It's a very distinctive sound. I mean, these bands were sort of, there's not so many around, but they tended to be based around factory workers, either that or the Salvation Army. It's this very distinctive sort of band made up entirely of wind instruments. And I don't know who booked them or where they came from or whatever, but they were brought into the studio and set to work. And it's a curiously mournful sound, isn't it? And very, very distinctive.
It's awfully considerate of you to think of me here, and I'm most obliged to you for making it clear that I'm not here. And I never knew the moon could be so big, and I never knew the moon could be so blue, and I'm grateful that you threw away my old shoes and brought me here instead dressed in red. And I'm wondering who could be writing this song. I don't care if the sun doesn't shine, and I don't care if nothing is mine, and I don't care if I'm nervous with you. I'll do my loving in the winter.
Jug Band Blues, played by Pink Floyd. Because of the way he was acting, the relationship between Syd Barrett and the rest of the band got worse and worse. They tried in their own way to figure it out. Founding member Nick Mason.
Well, rather badly, I would say, how we dealt with Syd's condition. And Syd was sort of deteriorating as a member of a band. And we're fond of saying we don't really know what happened, which is true, and saying that we think it was LSD that acted particularly badly on him, which I think is also true. But I also think there's something else there, which is something we'd absolutely never even crossed our minds, which was that actually Syd had decided he didn't want to be in a rock and roll band. Syd actually was a very talented painter, and I think he thought he'd actually like to go back to art school. But this was so impossible for us to grasp that we assumed he must be ill, which, as I say, I think he was as well. So instead of sort of dealing with it in the sensible way, which might have been to say much earlier to him, okay, fine, you do that, we'll carry on, we kept sort of trying to work out what the problem was and make him better by having, you know, taking time off or giving him a rest day or whatever. I mean, when I look back on it, it's sort of ludicrous. But we just didn't know any better at the time. But the fact of the matter is you tend to start when you're young guys and on your own, and eventually you become, you know, you get married, you have children, whatever, and the relationships change. And of course, it's much easier at the beginning when you share an absolute common goal. And that goal gets a bit fragmented further down the line. You know, different people want different things.
Sid Barrett not part of Pink Floyd, they carried on with David Gilmour.
They didn't restart. They actually sort of seamlessly flowed from one thing to another, or perhaps not entirely seamlessly. But basically, it wasn't a restart. It was a transition. It was a fairly rapid transition in terms of live playing, because we did about three or four gigs with five of us playing, and then that was it. But the actual transition musically took, and I would say, about a year, really, from mid-68 to mid-69. You know, David was, the four of us were playing Sid's songs, with David singing Sid's songs, and in some cases even miming to Sid's songs. It's interesting to compare the sort of, or to consider a number of bands where the main man has left, and in some cases the band then disappears, but in other cases it picks itself up and reinvents itself and carries on in the, you know, fond of citing Fleetwood Mac because they had so many people who came and went, but also Genesis, and we were not dissimilar, that we lost our main man, but actually then Rick and Roger and David all eventually stepped up and wrote.
Roger Waters and David Gilmour co-wrote a song at the end of 1968 and released it as a single.
Hey, Gene, this is Henry McLean, and I've finished my beautiful flying machine, and I'm ringing to say that I'm leaving, and maybe you'd like to fly with me and hide with me, baby. Isn't it strange how little we change? Isn't it sad we're insane? Playing the games that we know end in tears, the games we've been playing for thousands and thousands and thousands. Till 2005, I hope you're exceedingly thin. For if you are stout, you will have to breathe out while the people around you breathe in, breathe in.
Yeah.
me at the Sky, played by Pink Floyd. You're listening to Creation, the early years of Pink Floyd. I'm Craig Bailey. In 1969, director Barbe Schroeder asked Pink Floyd to create a soundtrack to his film More.
I think Barbe came to us and said he was a fan and he got this movie. And I think we jumped at it because we were interested in film anyway, but I think also we could see that it would be a really, it would suit the way we like to work, because we were not hooked into having to do sort of songs of a classical setup in terms of verse, chorus or whatever, middle eight. We were happy to do a sort of 30-second piece of music that had to link a couple of scenes or whatever. And in some cases, the music could be arrhythmic, so it didn't matter. It actually, the timing was not critical. When we did the first Barbe film, we didn't have access to SMPTE code, sort of time clocks. We'd go into the screening room and simply, with a stopwatch, note the amount of time that the music was required to cover. And then we'd go away and record it for about that sort of length. And it worked perfectly, actually.
Some of the songs found a new life in Pink Floyd's stage show, The Man and the Journey.
Basically, it was the beginning of a sort of the idea of not so much the concept album, but the concept stage show. And The Man and the Journey was really two parts to a live performance that we gave. It had some songs within it, but actually there were a lot of sort of fairly strange sections to it. So there was the beginning of what became Alan's Psychedelic Breakfast on Metal, where we actually, it was a more elaborate version where there was a percussion piece where we actually hammered a table together by sawing up wood and then nailing it together and then putting a burner on it so that we could boil a kettle, so that the kettle would then whistle in the right key for the next song to start or whatever. I can't, as I say, my memory of it is a little hazy, but it did involve a lot of running around the stage, banging, sawing, shouting, and being incredibly avant-garde.
color and careful with that axe, Eugene, performed by Pink Floyd. Coming up, more music from Pink Floyd and conversation with founding member Nick Mason. I'm Craig Bailey, and you're listening to Creation, the early years of Pink Floyd. 92.9 WBBM. Welcome back to Creation, the early years of Pink Floyd. I'm Craig Bailey. On the Highway, performed by Pink Floyd. It's one of many songs recorded for the movie Zabriskie Point that never made it into the film. Drummer and founding member of Pink Floyd, Nick Mason.
Well, Zabriskie Point was, by then we were working with Proper Time Code and everything else, but we were also working with a director who was, I won't say less of a fan, but wanted much more control, which meant that even if we'd done a piece of music and it seemed to work, he needed us to do it again and again so that he could then choose one of the versions in order to retain control. We'd do a number of different versions of it, and then he'd end up using the Grateful Dead instead anyway. So it was hard work, Zabriskie Point, but it, you know, there were ideas that were developed for Zabriskie that ended up on Dark Side. So nothing is ever wasted. We recycle.
Riot scene, played by Pink Floyd for the Zabriskie Point soundtrack. It never made it into the film, but became the basis for the song Us and Them on the album Dark Side of the Moon. Pink Floyd's sound grew and changed through the late 60s and early 70s. Drummer Nick Mason.
We were evolving our own sounds, but also, of course, we were learning to play the bloody instruments. You know, I mean, when at the point at which we signed our record contract, I'd played a bit of drums, but only a bit. I mean, but 2 years later, I'd done, you know, 250 shows and spent I don't know how many hours in a recording studio. So I'd finally learnt how to hang on to my sticks rather than dropping them all the time. It was an inevitable development. Yeah, I think it shows through that period.
The band recorded this version of Embryo in 1968 for a record company promotional album.
Love is all I am upon, is all I am. I'm so new compared.
need a little more room. Waiting here seems like years, never seen the light of day.
2 years later, Pink Floyd played Embryo live on the BBC.
Boom, gloom, boom, gloom. Always needs a little more room. Waiting here seems like years. I will see the sunshine.
A bit of Embryo, performed by Pink Floyd. You're listening to Creation, the early years of Pink Floyd. I'm Craig Bailey. 1970 was also the year that Pink Floyd created Atom Heart Mother, a multi-part instrumental piece. Nick Mason.
We always maintained an interest in sort of long-form music, and I think certainly with Saucerful of Secrets, it's one of the tracks that I'm still really rather proud of is the title track. Because I think the way it's actually assembled and the way that it runs through three entirely different sort of movements, really, is something that was to continue on into almost everything else we ever did. Discovering a lot about sound at the time, you know, most of it would be discovered in the recording studio. You know, we'd suddenly gone from 4-track to 8-track, and then there were all sorts of new noise controlling, Dolby system noise reduction, Aphex noise reduction, limiters, compressors. There was a whole new world of guitar pedals and voice treatments coming out at the time. So it was absolutely down our street, really.
Pink Floyd experimented in the studio a lot. This next song was a work in progress that would eventually turn into the 23-minute epic called Echoes. Part 14, performed by Pink Floyd. It later became the song Echoes on the album Metal. Work on Dark Side of the Moon started in mid-1972, but before that, Barbe Schroeder called on Pink Floyd again. He wanted songs for a new film called The Valley. Because of a fight with the film company, the band released the soundtrack with the title Obscured by Clouds. Drummer Nick Mason.
Obscured by Clouds, I'd say, is very similar to Moore in that we now knew Barbe quite well. We knew roughly what he liked and wanted. And it was a very easy process, really. We did most of the recording at Strawberry Studios, I think, just outside Paris. And I won't say it's easy, but it's amazing how quickly it was all done. I mean, it was about 2-3 weeks' work, I think.
One song was by David Gilmour, and it would be the last Pink Floyd tune written only by him. He also took a break from writing lyrics after this for 15 years. Childhood's End was based on a science fiction novel by Arthur C. Clarke.
We moved as a herd or a pack. And yeah, there was a big interest in sci-fi, and we'd all have the books and then we'd swap books, you know, and then it was fringe jackets and we all wanted to look like cowboys, and then I can't remember what was followed that. But yeah, no, if one person was into it, usually we all were for a while. Southern Comfort was another big enthusiasm for a while.
It's just too steep. Is your conscience at rest? If one's put to the test, you awake with a start to just the beating of your heart. Just one man beneath the sky. Just two ears, just two eyes. Long past thoughts and memories, childhood's end, your fantasies merge with harsh realities. And then as the sail is hoist, you find your eyes are growing moist, and all the fears never voiced say you have to make your final choice.
Childhood's End, performed by Pink Floyd in 1972. Creation, the early years of Pink Floyd, was produced by Paul Chufo for Joyride Media. Our executive producers are Greg Lynn and Eric Molk. Our associate producer is Andy Kahn. All songs in this program can be found on the Pink Floyd Records Sony Music release, Creation, Pink Floyd, the early years, 1967 to 1972. Special thanks go to Paul Losby, Andy Murray, Elena Bello, Joe Greenwood, Tony Smith, Adam Block, Greg Lynn, John Jackson, Charlie Stanford, Elliot Stubbs, Angela Sabetta, Tom Cording, and Fran DeFeo. I'm Craig Bailey, and thanks for listening.